Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Accelerate series. I'm your host, Adam Chen. The startup world is moving at a breakneck pace. For seed stage founders, the goalposts aren't just moving, the entire field is being redesigned. Between the explosion of AI native architectures and the shifting benchmarks of venture capital, building a company today requires a new kind of playbook. This special Accelerate series is dedicated to the stories and challenges of early stage builders and what drives them to innovate. We're sitting down with founders who are navigating the chaos, hitting their milestones, and redefining what it means to be a venture scale company in the age of AI. Whether you're looking for inspiration from other founders or just want to understand the latest expectations in the early stage, you're in the right place. Now, on to the show. And welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Accelerate series. Joining me today, I'm thrilled to have one of our new clients, Temerlin Rakhmetsinov. Temerlin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Adam. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm really hyped up about the podcast and sharing my story.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It's great to have you here. And I've been super inspired following your journey. So for our audience, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. I'm a co-founder and CEO of a early stage startup called Armeta. I live in San Francisco in California. Recently, I graduated at our demo day from Alchemist Acceleration Program. And I am building in this space together with my team in the energy and chemical sectors. So we help the companies in the sector to digitize their engineering drawings in legacy formats, basically, for various workflows. The company itself is headquartered in the US, but we have operations across the globe in Europe and Central Asia, and now expanding into the Japan market and Middle Eastern as well. And we are a team of almost 40 people, and the majority of those are under 25. So we are a team of young aspiring engineers, let's say. We united by the same idea and target, let's say. Yeah,
that's great. So tell me more. You had mentioned it's engineering drawings. Tell me more about the problem you're solving.
Absolutely. There are certain drawings that are named process drawings. Those process drawings, they govern every industrial plant. Yet no system can turn them into a model that engineers can query, basically. Because 80% of those drawings are kept in legacy formats like PDFs, scans, JPEGs, since all the refineries and plants were built 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And engineers and companies spend tens of thousands of man hours on a single project trying to digitize them. And this is the pain of hundreds of refineries and 14,000 chemical plants in the US alone. And we help them do it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's not just the US market, but global market that you mentioned. And you're already operating in a lot of these countries. That's great to hear. How long has this business been around? How long have you been working at it?
I mean, we've registered the business in July 2025, but okay. We launched the product 5 months ago, and since then we have reached a certain traction. So I mean, it's not a secret I can share, maybe. So currently we're in collaboration with 12 different corporations across the globe. Those are super major oil and gas asset owners and operators, and their engineering and construction contractors, basically. And
Wow, big market. I'm really curious, Temerlin. Tell me, how did you identify this problem in the first place? Like, what inspired you to build this over the past couple of years?
Absolutely. I founded Armeta together with my father, actually. But before founding Armeta, we already were, let's say, working together. For the past 5 years, I've been working together with him. We've built an industrial engineering business. We scaled it to $200 million in annual revenue. We executed projects across the globe for the petrochemicals and energy segments mainly. And when executing these projects, we faced certain problems first-handedly, which then we went out on to solve permanently, moving to San Francisco, and now we're moving to Houston. And you know how it was actually the reason that we started the company is one of the reasons. Basically, one day I ca come to the office, and my father, we were based in Kazakhstan, in Central Asia. And my father told me, "Hey, Tim, I'm tired. I'm going to the US. I was accepted to MIT to study AI and machine learning." I was like, "Man, you're 45 years old." Like, well, he was like, no, I will study till the end of the days, you know. So he went there, left everything behind. He finished the program. He calls me. "Hey Tim, bad news for you, good news for me. I'll stay in the US since I was accepted into Stanford, you know, university to study venture capital." And then he calls me the third time, and but this was like just for the laugh of the game, I guess. He was like, "I'm feeling philosophical, so I was enrolled into Harvard Medical School to study longevity, you know, so and all that kind of stuff." And every time he was studying somewhere, he shared that knowledge with me, and I was got hooked on, let's say, on the dream of building a company in the Silicon Valley. But that was something, you know, untouchable for me as a teenager, you know, growing up in Kazakhstan, somewhere in Central Asia, you know. But nevertheless, my father was the one who inspired me. And I also have a younger brother. His name is Arwan. He's also a founder. And our father shared this knowledge together to me and him. And I studied startup together with my father. My brother started his own. He got accepted into Y Combinator when he was 17 years old. And at 2018, he raised a 7 million round while being a single employee in his company. So we both like, and he also lives in NSF now. So we're kind of like a startup family in a sense. And I love the fact that we're doing it together with my father and yeah, building the legacy, let's say.
That's an incredible story. What an amazing father and role model I think that you have. I'm envious a little bit. That's incredible. And it sounds like you've done some world traveling as well, coming from Kazakhstan to the US, and that's inspiring. So tell me more about working with your father. How's that impacted you? What are some lessons that you've learned from him?
You know, every time I share the fact that I have co-founded the startup together with my father, everyone is like, "No way, I would never work with my father." You know, I mean, we would fight, you know, like every day and stuff and stuff and stuff. But in my case, it's the other way around. I mean, you just gotta understand that your parents are the ones who love you, you know, without reason, let's say, and they always want you to be better. So even though they can be harsh on you, it's just a part of trying to deliver some value into your life, you know. So he's the most harsh person I've ever met, to be honest. But nevertheless, I started realizing that this was for my own benefit. And when I changed my mindset, let's say, I started seeing that this is actually great, and started listening to his advices, and just grew exponentially, you know, in that sense. And the first fact, the second one is that I didn't even think for a second that I can be, you know, that someone can lie to me from my co-founder, since this is my father, you know, and we can't just fight and split up, you know, or whatever. So I mean, I feel like my back is, I mean, is you know, will not be stepped, basically, you know, in that regard. And the third fact is that we like motivate each other and complement each other's capabilities. He's the main source of domain expertise, let's say, and I'm the source of energy and being the person who is like mindset-wise oriented to the Silicon Valley and everything. So it's kind of a nice combination in the end of the day. Yeah.
That's awesome. I would argue that your father also has the Silicon Valley mindset. He's
He
got a
does, he does.
repeat founder at least, he keeps going back for more.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And this was his dream as well. You know, he built and exited six businesses so far, but those were Those were mainly in the Asian region, so Asia, Europe, and it was his dream to build a company in the US. So it was my dream as well. So we are sharing the mutual dream now. Yeah.
What an amazing experience. That's incredible. So, tell me a little bit more about your goals, right? So you've moved to the United States, you're in San Francisco, you're now moving to Houston, you've got this startup with amazing early traction. Where do you want to be in 5 years? What's success look like to you?
I studied in Germany in the university for 4 years. I studied industrial engineering, and I remember the first day I came to studies to Germany. I was so hyped up about the studies that I'm gonna be an engineer. I'm gonna be a creative person. Building the future. Impacting the whole economy. And stuff and stuff and stuff. And I came to studies, and I had this discussion with my professor that, I'm so excited, to be a creative person and blah blah blah. And he was like, "Tim, the reality is not the same that you're describing right now. So engineers mainly, do this and that and that and that." And I was like, the rainbow vanished, I was like, no way that I am as an engineer. I gotta spend 80% of my time working with repetitive stupid tasks, and the creative part is just dedicated to, I mean, to the minority of the time. And throughout the studies, I faced it personally. Then went on to work with my father for the past 4 and 5 years, and I've realized that really that engineers nowadays spend 80% of the time on manual workflows, on just the stupid stuff. Sorry for my language, but my dream is to free engineers from this type of activities, because engineers foundationally were born to be creative, to create new things rather than dealing with the legacy. I mean, philosophically speaking, this is the answer. If we're talking about the milestones that we would like to achieve, is our initial goal wasn't digitizing legacy drawings and documentation. Our initial goal was generative design of industrial plants. So one when you approach our system, our platform, give it some prompt, let's say, and boom, you can create different oil refineries and gas processing plants and the other facilities. Nowadays, it can take up to 5 years, and we wanted to do it like in a couple of days, weeks maximum, But we realized that when you're tackling generative design, to generate whatever, first you need the data and context. And the data and context comes from different sources, and the legacy documentation is one of those. So we went on to start from this step, let's say.
Got
And
it. Interesting. So, follow-up question on that. Which idea came first? It sounds like your company is certainly leveraging new AI tools and tooling. Did you have the idea and then you saw AI come to market and you're like, now we can make this a reality? Or did AI come first and then you thought about how to best apply it to your domain of, your expertise?
Yeah, actually, the original idea of generative design was my father's idea. So when he studied in MIT, it was 2022, I believe. His diploma work was generative design, actually.
Okay.
So he was trying to prove that it is doable, but the technological stack is not there yet. And that year, as far as I remember, it was the boom when ChatGPT 2.5 was released, and the mass public started getting access to LLMs. And since then, the models and the development of the general models started being exponential. Since then, the technological stack was, let's say, developing rapidly and getting to the sense of being ready for those needs, let's say. So we went on and started keeping up with the tempo of developing those models and building ourselves for this the models. And yeah, so at that point, the technological stack wasn't supporting our idea, let's say. But nowadays, with the help of AI, it comes in hand, let's say. Yeah, absolutely.
Got it. Tell me a little bit more about how you think about the future development of your product now. So, you've got a lot of early traction. It sounds like you're working, internationally. How are you soliciting feedback? What's next on the roadmap for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When every time that we serve a new client, they're telling us, "Hey guys, can you do this on top? Can you expand into this? Can you add this?" Everyone sees a certain value in the product, but they need more, more and more and more. And I totally understand it. And we gained feedback from all of the companies that we're piloting with, from the paying customers, from the industry experts, and we're seeing the certain similarities in their requests and into the expansion into several other types of drawings, for example, or in automating certain workflows end to end. Since nowadays there are tons of different AI tools, applications, platforms, but everyone is getting tired of certain software as a service model. Everyone demands results, like end-to-end results basically. So more of is AI native services, so we are seeing the potential in this regard, we're not positioning ourselves as a pure product company that we have a off-the-shelf solution that everyone uses. No, every time we now meet clients, we try to create something exclusive for them. We're integrating deeply into their workflows and then using the developed solution to expand it to the other clients. And we are even thinking about rebuilding the industry itself in a way that we have an idea of potentially soon acquiring a traditional engineering company in the US and making it AI native and provide AI native services. But this is a private equity story, growth equity story, but we're thinking about it, yeah.
I see that trend happening in a number of different industries, pairing the technology with the service delivery to deliver those outcomes. So I think that a very wise direction. You mentioned earlier, you're focusing a little bit on oil and gas energy infrastructure at the moment. Does your product have application beyond that industry? Tell me a little bit more about where people find
Yeah,
benefit.
we've already seen some applications in water treatment, in pharmaceuticals, in food processing, in nuclear segments, and very minor application in data centers. Actually, this is a very interesting maybe content for the viewers. With the rapid expansion of need of artificial intelligence, the source of the compute power, that's all the data centers are in need as well. So the company started building them, very, very fast, very fast temp. But they were designed in an incorrect way. I'm going to explain why. The majority of those. So if you see at the statistics, almost every center has certain outages. And the reason behind those outages is mainly the cooling and systems and power generation and connectivity systems, because data centers were designed, engineered from a civil engineering point of view. And civil engineering is all about the steel structures, and so to the building not fall down, be blown by the wind, So it's all about the steel structures, and everything else inside is being built around the steel structures. When we're talking about the industrial slash process engineering, it's all about the piping, mechanical equipment, and connectivity between each other, and the remaining building is built around it. So it's the other way around. But the power generation sources for the data centers are oil and gas facilities. And oil and gas facilities were built as industrial engineering objects, let's say. Data centers were built in civil engineering as civil engineering objects. So those are used totally different tools, totally different mechanics and approaches, and they do not correlate and connect, and that's why there are a lot of different outages happening in with data centers. So And we have a certain minor use case in this aspect as well.
Okay, interesting. What are some of the key benefits that your customers realize by using your software?
So first of all, just I'm going to give you like a case example of what we've done in 6 hours. And companies nowadays would spend 9,500 hours basically, and approximately 1 million in man-hour costs. So first of all, it's speed of execution. So it's an ability to win more tenders, to provide services faster, to save on costs, on man-hour costs, to free the engineers up for more valuable tasks. The compliance as well, since there are regulators in the US who oblige operators to make their drawings up to date and stuff, so the value proposition would be the major ones, the compliance, the speed of execution, and cost reduction, let's say.
That's great. That's great. Those are real tangible hard numbers that you can calculate as well. So it's easy to prove that value post sale. That's wonderful. So a couple more, I guess, follow-up questions here on your own founder journey. Being a founder is incredibly hard. It sounds like you have an incredible team surrounding you, but I'm just curious, like, what have you learned along the way? What are some of the biggest takeaways in this journey? You'd spent some time with your father prior. Now you've been a founder. Any big epiphanies or surprises that you've encountered along the way?
Yeah, actually, before I met, I founded two more startups and they failed. I can share the stories of how they failed. I mean, very briefly. Basically, what I've realized that sometimes founders, they build in silence, without telling the market what they're building, without getting the feedback. So they're thinking that they're treating the products as their babies, like my baby is precious, it's perfect, it's gonna be used by everyone, it's great. But once they publish it online, no one freaking uses it. Since they didn't validate the product, with the market. So this was one of the mistakes in my previous ventures. So now when I want to develop a certain feature, even if I've not developed the feature itself, I go and tell all of my clients that I've already developed this feature. It is ready to be bought. Would you buy it right now? And they're like, hell no, man. Like, we do not need it. I'm like, okay, validated. So I won't develop it, or the other way around, So now I even do it the other way around. So I in the first place, I sell and then develop, So in a sense, kind of. The second is speed of execution, Sometimes teams, they're trying to idealize their product until it's performs accurate, 100% accurate, very ideally. But this is not the case. The faster you'll deploy, the faster you'll get the feedback, the faster you'll understand some other feature needs, the faster you'll understand the segment and the needs of your potential clients, so so the first point being is the building in silence. The second is the speed of execution of building. And the third point I would say is that one of the startups I founded it just for the for the for the for the let's say just founded just to found something, So I wanted to be a founder, very much. And I realized that without the and I started a startup in fashion tech, stuff. And I didn't know a single thing, about the fashion and like that, but and I lacked domain expertise and I couldn't do it. And if you are a CEO of the company, how can you build a company without understanding the segment? And so the domain expertise is a very important thing. So yeah, I spent the last 5 years professionally and even more academically in the field of engineering. And I have certain domain expertise, and this is where I feel comfortable now and can provide certain value to my own company. So Yeah, so this would be the main 3 points, I would say, that just from the top of my mind here.
Yeah, that's great. You kind of have the duality of both kind of the technical acumen, but also the kind of business acumen, I think, that you need to be a successful founder. So it's great that you were able to hone that over the past 5 years. Going back to the story you just shared, though, you talked about, I don't know if you call it building in public, but you have a relationship more like a partner relationship with your clients. Like you're building something, you're getting feedback, you're taking input from them on what they might need next. Tell me a little bit about how you think about maintaining and nurturing those relationships with your customers.
Absolutely. So I love the approach of design partnership with companies. You can be the smartest guy ever, bragging about your domain expertise and stuff, but you do not know the particular workflows, the tools that the companies use, in every possible case. Since it's all subjective, domain expertise is subjective, and sometimes you need to go out there and ask millions of questions, even though you're a professional in your field. And the design partnership itself is very important, I think, to keep. I mean, you can reach the product market fit, you can understand totally what your customers need. But in my case so far, what I've seen is that when you do not approach companies as pure cash cows, for you, when you really try to go out for dinners with them, chill with them, to talk about personal stuff, they get more open to you and they share their own domain expertise. And they share more, tend to share more, professional aspects of it, of how the company should be developed, which features should we include, and stuff and stuff and stuff. So, for me, it's all about the personal touch with every client, and in the end of the day, it helps. So I've never faced any problems with, taking someone out for dinner and being a good guy, So, yeah.
I do that frequently in my business as well as breaking bread. There's no better way to get to know somebody than, sharing a meal, and it's something that we all need, sustenance. I'd be curious also, you're doing business internationally. When it comes to nurturing those relationships, do you find it different with American companies and non-American companies?
In the US, the venture capital and the startup ecosystem is far more developed than in the other countries, So the country itself is very supportive of applying the technologies that are being developed by younger companies, So they even have fast tracks, the governmental ones, for startups. Every super major corporation has its own venture arm, almost, and everything else, So in other countries, it could be more harsh terms for startups, and you can even so, for example, sometimes there are no possibilities to sell to the government if you're in the B2G segment, since there are some pre-qualification needs. So that, for example, in certain countries that we've worked in, in order for you to sell to a huge corporation, public company, or the government, you have to have 3 years of operating experience as a legal entity. You have to you gotta have paid certain amount of taxes, at certain point, and blah blah blah. So as an early stage startup, you wouldn't be able to sell, So the US is more supportive in this regard, and the venture funding ecosystem is more supportive, let's say. But I wouldn't say that the emerging markets are worse. So, for example, in Kazakhstan, they've created a Ministry of Artificial Intelligence. They announced the year of 2026 as a year of artificial intelligence. The president himself put certain KPIs of integrating AI technologies into governmental workflows, where he will fire every single minister, in the country. We've partnered up with NVIDIA, so we're building. We have Kazakhstan has a valley of data centers building now, partnered up with NVIDIA. Kazakhstan became like the one of the first countries to partner up with OpenAI and stuff and stuff and stuff. So I wouldn't say that emerging markets are worse, in that regard, but they're being trying to be more adaptive, and they're smaller and they're younger, so there is more even room for maneuvers, for adaptability even. So I would even debate that in the long run that those emerging markets could potentially outrun US in certain aspects, so it's great. And when you're dealing with the Middle Eastern market, for example, from my experience at least, the very first weeks of collaboration, it's nothing about professional, side of things. It's all about building a personal touch, to so endless evenings in restaurants, tea, coffee, and all of that stuff, so it's all about building up trust, respect, personal understanding of the stakeholders, and then you proceed with the business. And when in so for example in San Francisco, I just meet someone, they're like, "Hey, my name is Similon. Okay, I don't give a shit about your personal life. Let's just jump straight into it, So it's all about the commercial value and everything else. So totally different. But I understand, the speed of life in the South is totally different, and everyone is trying to to do something that's totally different values there, let's say. So yeah, something like that. So it's all about cricket and its applicability for the culture, let's say. So the cultural aspect is huge in every country and it's unique.
You're very wise, Tamerlan. And we spend as founders, especially, in the early stage, we spend so much of our lives in our waking moments, focused on work that it's nice to bring a little bit of personal into that world a little bit, right? We have to have fun while we're also, slaving away in front of the computer or on a factory floor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Temerlin. It's been great getting to know you, just over the past few months too, as you've become a client of Finstrat and watching your journey. Not sitting next to you at the table, but we're not really too far away either, has been very inspiring. But I'd be curious with one final question. You kind of alluded to it earlier. Obviously, your father's by your side as a co-founder, but you mentioned your team, and I was just wanting to kind of highlight, is there anyone you want to thank? Who are you building this with? Like, who's been the most help to you as you've been on this journey?
Absolutely. So in terms of my team, I've founded a startup with my father and one more co-founder. His name is Nurullah. He's our lovely CTO. We met working in an engineering company previously. He's 19 years old, managing 40 people now. I'm very proud of him, shout out to him and all of the. I mean, it will take me a lot of time to name everyone, and but nevertheless, I appreciate each of my team members. They've brought a certain understanding of the team play to me personally, since I've grown so much during the past half year, building the team up from 3 people to 40. And besides my team, and then I'm used to working with companies like on a commercial basis that they'll be harsh, no personal touch to it, and I started working with Finstrat, and you wouldn't realize the amaze that I had when I met you, Christian, Olivia, Riva, and the other the team members, and they were like very supportive and very very funny, eager to, I mean, offer different dinners, different events and stuff, just calling me up saying, "Hey, do you need help with this?" Just even small gestures that I posted on LinkedIn that I'm moving to Houston, like everyone was like, "Hey, man, congratulations. Let me know if we can help with something, documents, financials, whatever, just I mean, It feels nice, you know, when you have not like companies that support you professionally, but support you personally, and it motivates you even to build more and you know, dedicate yourself into this commitment to, you know, to Finstrat, for example, to Alchemist, to other companies who are basically collaborating in this way. So I wanted to thank you in the first place. It was a pleasure working with you. And we won't do so. We'll work with you until the end of the days, let's say. And yeah, a very big thank and I say hi to all of the team. And I appreciate you for inviting me for this podcast. And even this podcast itself is a sign of trying to help, you know. So it's very, very appreciated. And thank you so much once again. Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. And it's really easy to work with such an inspiring founder like yourself. I look forward to continuing to support you and watching the journey here. And may we realize success together.
Absolutely. Thank you
Yeah.
so much.
Well, Tamerlan, thank you so much again for coming on. Good luck with the move to Houston officially. And I know we'll be speaking again here soon, but to our listeners, thank you again. This is Temelin Rakhmetsonov, CEO and founder of Armeta AI. Thanks again for joining us, and until next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the Innovators and Investors Accelerate series. The road to seed and Series A has never been more complex. But as we heard today, the opportunities for AI-native startups to disrupt the status quo has never been greater. If you enjoyed this deep dive, make sure to check out our main podcast feed at finstratmgmt.com/podcast, where we host broader conversations on the intersection of finance, strategy, and innovation. There, you'll find our full library of episodes and resources designed to help you scale smarter. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review if you found today's insights valuable. I'm Adam Chen. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.